What's up, guys? This is Danny from Rethink Peer-to-Peer Lending. Welcome back to yet another video on my channel. Today I'm in the office of Debitum Investments, and alongside me Erik Rengitis, one of the shareholders of Debitum Investments, and at the time of this recording, soon to be announced CEO also of the Debitum Investments platform. So kind of news put me on the spot a bit today, but obviously exciting news to share also with the investor community. So I'm very happy and pleased we kind of have, let's say, a small exclusive interview with the new Debitum CEO. Erik, thank you very much for having me in the office today. To start off, maybe just shortly, what's your personal background and how you became one of the shareholders back in August last year?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for visiting. Yeah, and thanks for giving exposure and maybe introducing us to some investors who already know Debitum, or maybe some who don't know. So yeah, my name is Erik. I come from Riga, Latvia. So that's where Debitum is based in. Most of, if not almost, so far, not almost all of the team is based in Riga, Latvia. So my background is relatively quite simple. In my early age, I was lucky to understand what I like or what I'm good at. So that's finance. For some, it may be boring, but for people like me, I like it a lot. It's exciting. So I've been more than, I think, 14 years in corporate finance. So that is maybe a bit more conservative space as peer-to-peer lending. So I've advised, I think, more than 100 companies locally in the Baltics. Most of my experience and exposure comes from Baltic companies. So I've been advising on mergers and acquisitions, on finance raising, where that particular exposure, I think, helps a lot in Debitum, in peer-to-peer, because I've been through quite a lot of cases where you can see that starting from banks to private equity houses or mezzanine houses or bonds, where financiers evaluate companies, how they evaluate them, which ones they deem to be bankable and worth giving financing. So that has given me a privilege to have a very good feeling whom should we provide financing in Debitum, and maybe to whom not yet, shall we put it that way. So my background is, yeah, corporate finance.
Mm-hmm. And the story, how you became a shareholder of Debitum?
That is where I already, before we started recording, explained that Latvia is a relatively small country, beautiful but small, so everyone knows everyone. From my background in M&A, I knew previous owner. I basically, with Ingus, my second partner at Debitum, we came across a point in time where Martin, the previous owner, decided to look for other opportunities and to look for another owner, new owner for Debitum. Because I think at some point, sometimes it happens in life that you kind of put everything you've got into a company or a business, and at some point you realize that there's nothing more to give, and maybe there's someone else, a fresh energy, who would drive the company further. So I think that's the story behind me and Ingus becoming shareholders. So I think approximately a year ago we finalized ownership change, and for last year we've been busy in understanding how the business operates. And I was explaining also earlier, maybe a lot of changes we would like to have sooner or quicker, but it is what it is, in a sense that we're regulated, and it's providing financing and also keeping investors' money safe. So we wanted to do it better to do it in a slow manner rather than to maybe speed things up and at some point to have some interruptions. So for last year we've been working in making current procedures or mechanisms more automated, more structured, and also keeping in mind that we want to grow the platform, but we don't want to compromise safety for investors. So we have grown actually, I think, twice the size, assets under management. Mm-hmm. I think it's two times bigger than a year ago. Number of investors is who entrusted their money to us has grown also two times, but at the same time we keep default rates, I think, in a very good level, and I think that has been a priority, to move as quickly as we can, but not jeopardizing default rates and maybe giving money to businesses where we might end up in a problem. Mm.
To wrap up maybe the discussion or the topic of ownership, now from, you know, what you can maybe disclose, you told me already prior to the interview there will be new ownership structures coming soon. Can you disclose already now how those changes will look like?
Yeah, so if and that's our belief, if you really want to change things, then you need to start from top. So we've made a lot of changes so far. We've changed AML department, we've changed legal department, we've changed a lot of members of team, to be honest, almost everyone from previous chapter. And Tom's head of marketing and Henry's previous CEO were the last two members from previous chapter. So again, keeping in mind that we cannot afford any interruptions and instability, we wanted to be sure that the transition period is over, the new owners are controlling everything and are up to date. So in these upcoming days, we are signing documentation with Henry's, so we've decided in a friendly manner to depart our ways. So Henry's will no longer be CEO of Debitum. I will take the position and I will be new CEO of Debitum. And we will also have changes in head of marketing. Tom's was previously head of marketing, so we have a new fresh energy in mind. Mm. So we are about to finalize change of ownership after a year, after the transition period. We are, as we speak, today or tomorrow, we are informing also a regulator, finalizing paperwork and doing public announcements. So internally we have already announced it, but still there's quite a few technicalities we need to do first. Hmm.
From the previous conversation we had, I know you're well informed about the happenings of Debitum. Now I want to put you a little bit to the test and try to find out what your awareness is surrounding, let's say, the very origin story of the Debitum platform, specifically talking about the DEB token. Back in the day, 2017, there was a crowd sale funding, a token generation event, where the equivalent of 6 million euros were raised to set up the platform in a nutshell. And ever since, the value of this token has declined drastically. Actually not existent anymore, and many investors that have been part of this crowd sale funding are now complaining there's no utility that would eventually increase the value of the token and maybe generate some sort of return for their initial investment. How well are you aware of this overall situation, and how do you assess the situation as a whole, and do you feel like this is still, let's say, the heritage the new ownership should, you know, take care of?
Yeah, as with all things which have a longer period, there's always some baggage to be reckoned with. So regarding any external finance raising before we entered Debitum, we asked for independent opinions whether there has been any external financing used for financing Debitum using some kind of financing to buy assets which Debitum owns. So we've relied on regulator's opinion, on Grant Thornton, which is auditor for Debitum, because Debitum is SIA, which stands for Limited Liability Company, DN Operator, so it is a legal entity, and before we entered company, we were doing thorough due diligence about whether this company has ever received any external financing, and we also, apart from regulator and Grant Thornton, external auditor, we also used legal opinions from people from Big Four, and we were provided information that there is no connection with external finance raising whatsoever for Debitum. So we also checked books whether there has historically at some point, shall we put it simply, whether Debitum has gained any proceeds from external financing, and there was zero evidence that Debitum has used external financing. So our assumption and our understanding before we entered company and buying shares from previous owner was also legally signing documents and checking historic accounts and books that Debitum has not received external financing, and to put it simply, has gained nothing from such external finance raises. And also, there are no assets bought with external financing, there are no liabilities. So we can comment on what is in Debitum books and what Debitum owns or owes. Unfortunately, we cannot maybe engage in discussion what was previous shareholders' operations or businesses, but for us it was very important to check that there are no outstanding liabilities to third parties. So we feel comfortable because we not only relied on our opinion or what was confirmed by previous shareholder, but also very reputable and third party auditors, for example.
Mm.
So our position is that Debitum and we have not been raising any external financing. We have not been buying any assets or getting any benefits of any external financing.
Mm.
So that is where we need to limit ourselves in terms of new ownership, Debitum, and there's certain limitations when you enter a company as a new owner. Yeah.
So I would argue, from my perspective, the fact that there was some financing in the past, where, you know, let's say through which legal entity whatsoever, I think that can't be argued to an extent. But what I hear from your answers is basically you don't feel there's, from the new ownership, any responsibility towards certain investors from the past to, you know, to go after some utility for certain tokens that are connected with the platform still today.
No, I understand what you're asking, but our position is that if one gets a benefit from an external raise, yeah, you might be responsible for that. If you have zero benefit, if you have not participated in some activity, then it is quite challenging for us to engage even in a discussion where other people were maybe raising other financing. We have never been raising that external financing. Platform has never used that financing. And sometimes it happens that when you enter a company which was owned by a previous owner, later on some things pop up, and there's always discussion where you draw the line, yeah, which is the responsibility from new owners and which is the responsibility maybe from previous owners. So we found our comfort in again verifying it also by third parties and asking third party opinion. Has company been associated with fundraise? No. Has company got any benefits which would pass on to the new shareholders? No. So that is where we kind of draw the line, and we think it's fair and reasonable.
Hmm. Let's talk about Ukraine. Around 2 million of assets from the lender chain finance have been frozen since the start of the war. Can you comment on the overall situation and how many assets you were, or the lender was able to recover so far?
Yeah, so when the unfortunate event in neighboring country happened, the result was that part of assets, which are vehicles, were basically were damaged or disappeared because of, no, it's not a standard situation when you have a war in country, to put it mildly. And also part of receivables, which is largest asset in the leasing company, also part of people emigrated and had, let's say, real life challenges at that moment. So it was taken a decision from previous shareholder to put restructuring in place, not to, which kind of today also makes sense, yeah, to not put extra pressure on a company that they need to quickly repay whatever is left, but to try to stabilize the company, try to understand where are the assets, try to restart the company, and then when the company is stabilized, then to make a decision what to do. Maybe we would have done it a bit differently because the legal restructuring plan binds platform and company for, from our perspective, for too long period. We would prefer a shorter period, let's say a year, and every year we meet again, we look at the situation, and then we kind of make a decision to prolong it. At least we as a platform would have rights to prolong it. So that was one thing where, in principle, it still seems a right way to do it. When the war started and there's a stress on the company, you try to stabilize it. But maybe there could have been a better approach for a formal part of how the restructuring was put in place. So one is term. Second is also if the company recovers quickly, quicker, then I think that the interest rate which is put in the restructuring plan might also be more aggressive, I mean more favorable for platforms and investors. And currently we've been monitoring the company, receiving financials on a monthly basis, and the decision to stabilize it has proven to be right, because I think for the last 10, 11, 12 consecutive months, company is generating profit and recovering, so that means that investors have more collateral in place. But as we already spoke before the interview, still this is the area which is a heritage for us from previous ownership, but we here need to be very responsible, and we plan to find a solution for the investors, even if it's the problem occurred before we were owners. So we still very much focused on finding a solution. And currently I can give you a slight preview, because I'm not legally able to disclose all the details, but we have found an interested party which believes in the industry, believes in Ukraine, and is willing to make an offer for buying claim rights. So that means that we don't need to wait for 5 years. We don't need to wait for unpredictable result, whatever the result is going to be with the war. We also don't need to risk further devaluation of currency, because the loan is exposed to hryvnia fluctuations. And there's also a moratorium, which means that debt which occurred before war cannot be serviced currently. So we need to find an external partner investor who would buy claim rights from another EU country, and in that way we could offer investors a quick solution to get money back. Of course, the only problem is that still the company has less assets than outstanding loan. So from top of my head, rough figures were 2 million were outstanding loan for Ukraine. So currently company has 1 point, and again from top of my head, round figures, 1.4 or 1.5 are assets. So the investor indicatively offered 1.056, so around the top 1.1 million euros. Again, to put it roughly, it's 60% investors get money quickly and today and for sure, rather than waiting for 100% within 5 years. And we also spoke with colleagues that one thing we can do is we can do a special offer at the platform that only for investors that were engaged in Ukraine, we can make a bit more lucrative investment opportunities where we would not ask, for example, standard fees platform would ask, but kind of coming forth to the investors, taking into account the situation, we would kind of do it for free and offer some investment opportunities, which anyways in the initial restructuring period would enable investors to get full amount back. So we're still discussing it because we need to do a AML check, which is currently in the process. We still need to prepare the final documentation, and then that is a challenge how we make a decision or we communicate with investors. What would investors prefer, to wait a longer period and try to get all the money back from Ukraine, or not risk with these factors I mentioned earlier and maybe take less but now and try to invest it elsewhere and basically in the same time period get the money back? So that will be a challenge, how to ask opinion from investors, taking into account that there is not one or two investors, but it's a longer list of investors, and to get a consensus, that is a challenge. So we haven't thought that through, but we want to finalize first legally binding deal from the investor's side, and then we need to think how to communicate with investors. But all in all, it is unfortunate because it will be first default for Debiton for 5 or 6 years. And that will be something new for the platform, yeah. I think there's zero defaults so far. But again, at least the circumstances that the default happens for a company where you have force majeure, a war in a country, that is something very unfortunate.
Well, explained the entire situation. You already answered many of my follow-up questions. In parts also, you know, with the restructuring that was put in place in July last year, which, you know, happened, let's say, without the consent or without any voice from investor side, that's something that you feel like is now about to change. So investors can have the ultimate say in if they want to cut losses short and get around 60% back, or if they want to prolong or extend this kind of recovery period with the potential of getting paid back, but in a obviously way longer period of time. I think it was maybe 6 years down the line after the war ended. So that could take also quite a significant.
We approach this issue, if that would be my money, if I would put in Ukraine, what would I choose? So I think we will recommend investors exactly the same what we would do if it was my money. Because we also do calculation that for most investors, even if they have a default in Ukrainian assets, in combined investments at the platform, they would still be in very good pluses. So that is something which we find certain comfort in, that if you have a portfolio of different assets and if one defaults, unfortunately sometimes it happens, then it's very important that all in all the total amount is with profit, not with loss. So we did the calculation that most investors will actually be anyways in plus, but any default it's bad news.
Yeah. Maybe one last follow-up, because you mentioned for the, I don't know, 11, 12 previous months, Chain Finance has been operating profitable. Can you talk about how many assets have been recovered as of today, and if there may be also a way to get full repayments, and even adjusting the repayment schedule, which had quite a long timeline, and maybe ensuring a full recovery maybe 2 or 3 years down the line?
Yeah, so the company has been profitable. I think 20 to 30% has been kind of gained from point where war started. So that is good news. But the bad news is that the recovery in Ukraine legally, due to moratorium, cannot happen in a standard way. That we initiate debt collection, we get all the current receivables money back, we put it in a safe place, and we keep it until we are legally able to send it to investors. We cannot do it because of moratorium, so we are left with two choices. Whether we initiate that collection, we keep the money somewhere safe, but it stays, it's not working, so it doesn't generate any return, and potentially looking at different different historic countries where there has been war, the national currency will be devalued. So for sake of example, you recover most of money, you put it in a safe place, but then it stays while moratorium is in place. So it will just depreciate. So in that sense, the initial restructuring plan was very reasonable to keep the money in the company so that the money is working. Yeah, because currently the recovered money is issuing new loans to new car leasing clients and kind of working and generating more interest. So with the investor transaction, we would sell it and get money back. But if we don't do that, then probably we would change terms in more to more favorable to investors' side, that they're more flexible. In case a company quicker generates profit, maybe we share some upside. So that is scenario B. Now we're focused on monitoring it, that we're sure that it generates profit and the situation gets better. B, finalizing a deal with investors so that we can offer something to investors that we actually managed to have a success story to get. Yes, with discount, but money back from a country where you have a war, and then see if A and B doesn't work, then we go for the long haul, so to speak, and then probably we think how to improve investors' position. So it's tricky. Yeah.
All right. Something that isn't tricky at Debitome recently is the new onboarding of new lenders, actually with Juno Finance, Foresto and Bono House. Three lenders being introduced within a month, so a welcoming contribution to the likes of Flex Idea, Triple Dragon, that have been on the platform for quite some time. Can you just very quickly, the three new lenders, just point out one or two things that you like about them, what their profile looks like, and why you believe they have good assets worth putting on financing on Debitum?
Yeah, so again, as I was explaining before the interview, our strategy and approach is to finance a business loan which a bank would finance, but maybe the business or the company is not yet there, yeah? Because the interest we want to deliver for investors is higher than the bank loan interest, so we also need to take obviously higher risk, but we don't want to take very risky cases, because when the defaults kick in, then that's not the way we want to go. That's not the direction we want to go. So we try to find those companies for one or another reason, they're not yet able to go to the bank. So for example, Bono House. Investors' money goes into building a house. Yeah? Not a standard house. We try to find something interesting, niche segments. So Bono House is building a house from CLT, which stands for cross-laminated timber. So that is a different product, but in essence, we don't want to be too creative. Yeah, we still want to keep the conservative side. In this case, we provide financing to a company which uses money to build a house. So to put it simple, if investors' money goes to a house and we have security over that house, we feel relatively secure that investors will get the money back. The same goes with Foresto and Juno. Foresto primarily is dealing with buying forest properties and selling them. It's a longer discussion why not always local banks are ready to finance forest property acquisitions. There's many structural challenges for the banks to always finance it in full amount. So that's where Debitum steps in. We think that we're quicker and more agile in evaluating and finding those investment opportunities, so that again they're safe enough, but for some reason we can generate double-digit return for investors. So for Foresto, we like, they have track record, they have good people behind the wheel, they have a good balance sheet, and the essence is that we are financing physical assets. So we really like to be creative, but not too much creativity. And then Juno is also doing agriculture and forest property acquisitions, which we also like because they're physical assets, and they also do some lending, hand-picked lending. So when we see their books, we feel comfortable that they deliver.
Now Juno and Foresto, obviously two lenders from the agricultural forestry sector, let's say an industry that is booming lately, also with peer-to-peer financing. Where do you see the growth coming from? Do you see also maybe more lenders from this particular industry joining Debitum? And maybe you can talk why this industry is maybe different to other sectors.
Plenty of reasons. Again, from my previous experience, I've worked a lot with agriculture, less with forest, but a lot with agriculture. So if you take, for example, Latvian country, then 53.8% is covered by forest. So obviously that is our main resource, so to speak. And if you have most popular resource, of course, a lot of businesses will build around it. So I think the reason why certain platforms choose to finance that sector is because the sector is popular, big, and the big part of economy is built around it. So I think that's kind of self-evident. It's a huge sector, and you try to work around it. And historically, you're right. I wouldn't say it's booming, but it has proven that it has consistent returns. And still, our region has lower prices than the neighboring regions. So I think there's some fundamentals in place why lenders feel comfortable with the sector.
Something that all three new lenders have in common is they're all from Latvia. How much easier is it for you as a being a Latvian company to assess also Latvian lending companies compared to lenders from foreign countries? And do you feel like this is also a trend moving forward to focus on Latvian geographies, or do you target also other areas?
Yeah, we don't have ambition to stay local peer-to-peer platform. We have a lot bigger ambition, but the successful companies are successful because they understand also the practical and real things. So we took Debitum a year ago, so we had a lot of things we needed to sort out during that year, and we're still building around the team. Yeah? For example, we now onboard new junior AML. We now add people to support. We now add people to marketing. So there's a lot we're doing to strengthen the team. So first you need to be a local champion. That's what we believe. So if we are locals, of course it's easier for us to find something locally because we have network and we have better knowledge than someone coming not from our region. So for obvious reasons, local market is first step, but local market is relatively small, and also our strategy is to be a bit bigger. Our aim is to be platform number one for business loans in Europe. So currently we have doubled all key metrics within a year. So our ambition is to keep it at least for 3-4 years in a row with the same pace. So I think we're gonna aim for at least 100 million assets under management. Of course, I can't give you
in the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, that's currently our internal target. When we build infrastructure, when we build team, when we kind of put our mindset to, that's our internal aim where we would say, okay, that's a good enough job for next 3-4 years. Because scale, fortunately or unfortunately, allows you to also hire best talent. And we think that if you want to do something, you do it in a good quality, otherwise you don't do it at all. And if you really want to have best people and good talent, you need to have certain scale. For example, if you want to hire good talent, everyone knows you need to be competitive in salaries. But what mainly is not that self-evident is if you want to have good loan originators or finance really good companies, then you want to target for higher tickets. For example, a company who needs 100K loan usually is with lower corporate governance, with lower transparency, with a lot of things in lower quality. If you target tickets, you know, 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, you have a counterparty which is more professional, more transparent, more predictable, more diversified. Even if something happens in the industry, they are more stable. So our approach is that scale needs to be there in order for us to actually make a good product. So it's no way around that. Yeah.
Sounds like definitely an ambitious plan, 100 million portfolio in the next 3 to 4 years. Clearly then more lenders will be need to be added in the future. Can you also maintain this level of liquidity and high interest rates moving forward, or is that something just to, let's say, get the snowball effect rolling?
Again, coming from a corporate finance background, I'm very aware of different type of lenders. There is bank loan, yeah, everyone knows that bank issues loans, but that is one segment, maybe lower risk and lower interest. But then there are different layers. For example, if we take bond product, they always go for higher risk and higher return. So we would like not to compete with low interest rates and as safe as possible. We would like to target reasonable risk versus return ratio. We would like to go for, let's say, next level after the bank. For example, it's bonds, it's mezzanine. It's something where you can clearly see that double digit return makes sense also from a company's perspective. And I think that we will want to keep current return level for the future. Of course, there is always certain margin which fluctuates in terms of, for example, Euribor was 0 a few years ago, now it's 4%. Yeah, it's already 4% margin which has changed. Yeah, so returns will fluctuate and change as always in capital markets. But our approach is to be a bit more aggressive than senior lenders or bank lenders and to go for a higher return, because the philosophy is that peer-to-peer lending is. For some it's main investment, but our philosophy is that use peer-to-peer, for example, to diversify. Yeah? Invest in stocks, invest in commodities, invest in many things, yeah, which you understand, you feel comfortable with, but ultimately the philosophy is to diversify. Yeah? And that has proven historically that that is the best solution. So peer-to-peer, our philosophy needs to offer something a bit more innovative, creative, different, but at the same time keeping safety also in mind. Mm.
Yeah, that's, I think, a very good and reasonable approach, especially because I believe investors joining the peer-to-peer lending force, they're interested in double-digit returns. Otherwise, it might make more sense to relocate to other asset classes. And I think also one of the reasons why Debitum has, let's say, struggled to grow assets under management in previous years has been, let's say, a return expectation from 8 to 9%, which I believe was not competitive enough in the market. So if you can keep this momentum going and keep good performance or good interest rates up at this level while maintaining also a good, you know, risk profile and avoiding defaults, then I think that's good place to be in a good position and in the long term.
But if we will come to a situation that maybe growth should be postponed because we cannot find reasonable loan originators, then we'll for sure do it.
Sure.
Growth is a nice thing to have, but that is not priority number one, because I think at Debitum last year, one of the reasons why Debitum has grown for last year is that there are almost no late payments. There is very predictable repayment discipline, and I think that's number one, especially in peer-to-peer industry. You deliver to investors.
I agree. Talk to me about sandbox funding, an interesting concept with a couple of flaws, I would say, but we get there in a second. But what's the general idea of sandbox funding? What can you share about this, let's say, a bit more alternative lender concept?
Yeah, so we had from previous chapter, we thought that Triple Dragon is a good loan originator, so we kept it. We are also very happy and confident about Evergreen, so we kept it. And then we wanted to, since again we're a limited team, we don't want to do it too quickly, we wanted to build the next pillar. So since we're regulated, we have certain limitations how we can issue loans. So we decided that we want to build one loan originator which is owned by Debitum, in order to not miss on good investment opportunities where you need to be quick. Because if you want to...
Take your time.
If you want to give relatively expensive, compared to bank loans, debt to a company, for sure it's very good that you're quick. Yeah, because being quick doesn't cost you anything. But we can deliver to investors better return just by being quick. So we wanted to establish sandbox in order to have all the checks and balances in place from the regulator's side. But if someone smaller comes in the big picture and says that we would like to take money and we think that it's a good company, then through sandbox we can just use it as a vehicle to quickly onboard it. So that's just a mechanism how we can quickly grab those cherries on the market. Regarding sandbox, so we were approached by a few good companies and we needed to offer them onboarding. We understood that onboarding takes several months, and we just felt pity that we need to kind of pass on those investment opportunities. So we built a sandbox funding, and then later we actually realized that organically, it's a very good mechanism that we take a third party. We don't just put it immediately as a loan originator and put too much trust on it. We start working in smaller scale. We check their payment discipline. We check how they, in other aspects, corporate governance reporting, how they work on a daily basis. And then we can say that let's do full onboarding, which again costs a lot in terms of energy, money and time from company's perspective. So initially we don't want to give them a lot of money, we want to do it small tickets, but to check that they are trustworthy, and then when they have proven their trust, then we can say that we need to go through certain hustle, onboard you, but we're ready to give you immediately bigger tickets. So sandbox organically came as a filter or a mechanism how we can work with new parties.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like what's the maximum volume per lender that you would finance through the vehicle for, let's say, one particular lender?
I'm not sure that most of people have noticed what has been legally done in the platform. So legally we are regulated. When we issue something in the platform, we need to have legal framework for that. So we have had 8 million limit for sandbox for last year, and we needed to reapply for new prospectus, which was confirmed, to be honest, last week. So we used 8 million and then we had to pause sandbox because it was going so well that the limit was full, and then we need to resubmit with new documentation, wait for regulator to be approved, and then we had this interruption. And then we legally went through full bond issue documentation, which we haven't marketed, but basically last few investment opportunities for Estor and Uno, they went through full bond issue as they would go through Nasdaq. So now yesterday we issued a few investment opportunities, first time they are with ISIN number, like you would do in a full package bond issue. So there are certain limits which are placed by regulator and certain limits which we feel comfortable with. Currently, for example, Triple Dragon is big enough that we are discussing next phase to increase their exposure, but we've been deliberately pausing on increasing their exposure, because again, if you look at the portfolio, we assume that investors want to diversify, and you always need to be ready that something might go wrong with someone, then the rest of assets kind of compensate that. So you are right, it is a challenge how much you want to, how big of a bet you want to place on one player. Mm-hmm. So we try to limit it so that one loan originator doesn't grow too big. At the same time, we keep in mind that the platform has doubled in size in a year. And also you need to keep in mind that it is not that easy to find good investment opportunities with that kind of return. So there's like juggling with balls and trying to find the perfect mix which would work. So there are no carved in stone limits, but we constantly try to make it kind of reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so no internal threshold as such for the rookies?
Legally, we have internal thresholds, we have legal thresholds, we have thresholds that we want to work certain time with a new party, that you get certain money back and you can check that the payment discipline is okay. There's no one limit, because there's a lot of layers where we would say that not too fast, not too mm-hmm. much. So there's no one limit, but there's a lot of limits where we feel comfortable that ultimately it will save time for us. Mm.
But maybe you can disclose, let's say, an average ticket size for new lenders, phases that they go through?
We would like to have a counterparty which is able in a longer term to take at least 5 million euros, because mm-hmm. it makes sense to have certain scale, because we have costs for monitoring, costs for setting up legal vehicles, costs for and there are different other processes which just anyway, how big or small you are, we will still need to spend time and energy and resources. And in order to keep minimum fees, we need to have scale. But the question is, in what period are you going to reach this limit? Because we don't want to send 5 million euros to someone we don't know. Yeah? So at least 5 million euros, that is something we think worthwhile spending time on.
No, but I was not referring, let's say, the individual lender focus outside of sandbox funding, let's say within sandbox funding. So to test out new lenders, do you say like...
We usually start with a few hundred thousand euros, not much, because Sandbox currently gives a buyback guarantee. So if some disruption in our portfolio occur, then basically drags down other parts of profit we've generated. So we would need to compensate it out of our pocket in some way. So we, in the beginning, we really want to go with small tickets. Mm. So it's, yeah, 100k I would say. Mm.
If I'm not mistaken, both Foresto and Juno went through sandbox funding first, right?
Yes, and this is something which organically, we didn't think of it initially, but somehow everything happened as it should happen. We started with them, with smaller tickets, growing bigger tickets, verifying that they are trustworthy through Sandbox. And then we are now in a process that we want to onboard them as a loan originator, as Triple Dragon or Evergreen, but you can't convince an entrepreneur to do it in day number one, because we are not ready to give you a lot of money, but they need to spend a lot of resources to be onboarded. Mm. So Sandbox proven to be a good quick solution to grab those cherries, and later if the relationship with particular borrower works out and it's a fit between platform and them, with the interests, with how we operate in a daily manner, then we want to onboard them. Mm.
Is that also the vehicle for future lending companies that every lender then has to go through, or do you see exceptions? Or
if we find Triple Dragon 2, Evergreen 2, whatever, something we feel comfortable and the company is serious enough that we can say, look, for a few months let's work with smaller amount and then let's gradually increase it, mm-hmm. if we feel comfortable that there is a potential for cooperation, we would like to onboard it. But if entrepreneur says, hey, well, we're just warming up, I don't want to do full onboarding, help us make it easier, then we do it through Sandbox.
Mm-hmm. All right. Can you share how many lending companies are currently operating beneath the Sandbox umbrella?
From top of my head, I don't know, something around below 10. It's not a lot, because if it's a long list...
Sounds like a lot. Not in volume, but...
it's relative. Someone's used to having platforms which have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, yeah? We feel that our approach is more like private banking, like niche. We really want to understand what's happening with the borrower. So up to a moment when we have two or three times bigger team, I don't feel comfortable that we can keep track of things. So then I better keep it in a smaller scale. But for sure, we completely understand what's happening everywhere. So a lot or not a lot, no. For us, number one is that we get money back to investors in a timely manner. So the rest is second priority. Hmm.
Next chapter, and also the last bigger one I want to address, is the financials. Likely a topic you're very you can answer very easily from your perspective and with your background for sure as well. So just walk me through the financial performance of Debitum Investments at the moment. The 2023 report was released some weeks ago, I think. Mm-hmm. So just a quick breakdown on how the financial performance of the company looks like.
We're in a mode that we invest, so that means we break even in this year in May. So last year is with losses, so that is something we initially, becoming new owners, budgeted in, that we will need to put some money in, apart from maybe buying the company itself, but also injecting some cash. We also increased share capital, I think, by something around $500,000. So now you don't see it in 2023, but this year we break even. So from now on, we are profitable, but we still have a long way to be a business that generates profit, and we can kind of enjoy sharing dividends. So I think 2024 and even 2025, it will not be like excessively profitable business. So you need to have a scale to be profitable in this industry, and if you are investing in new products and if you are growing, then it's very hard to maintain profit. So you will be with minimum profit at best. So we are in July, for example, launching a new project which we call PIS. Basically, investors now can send money or add money to the platform by a simple bank transfer. You go to your internet bank, you copy-paste your credential, requisites and bank account, and then you press transfer. So we've listened to what the community is saying. They said that we want to make it more convenient. So in July, it is planned to launch this new payment mechanism that basically you can top up. So directly as a simple purchase in the internet, you just top up. Yeah. So it sounds a simple thing, but for a relatively small team as Debitum is yet, it still takes some resources, investments, because you need to adjust your infrastructure and everything. So we've also did this year secured notes, which again is like full bond issue, yeah, which maybe sounds boring because it's from legal perspective, but it's a lot of resources to do it properly. And next priority for us is to do easiest registration or smoothest registration in the industry, because we're not happy with current registration flow. Yeah, it's still it's not an optimum experience for investor. Peer-to-peer should be quick, bang, 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 and here you go. And it's not rocket science, so we'll get there. And then there are a lot of small things, but they still, we treat them as an investment. Mm. We
Going back to the financials one second, now profitability is something that you're aiming at but while maintaining growth, but maybe you can again elaborate how you view this topic, profitability versus growth, from the Debitum perspective.
We want to have a situation that Debitum is profitable. We do not have primarily aim to get back our investment through regular profits. Maybe at some point in future we have an exit to a bigger financial institution that sees that the niche, the market and the whole concept works for them. I don't know, maybe some international bank from region would like to acquire it. Maybe we do another type of exit, not sure. Currently we're focused on having a very good platform in niche, in business loans. Not for sure having losses in future, because that does not make sense to generate losses. But first year, I think it's organic that you have losses. Unfortunately, it is.
Sure. One thing I would like to address, Debitum in the past has been, let's say, a bit more hesitant to share, let's say, performance-oriented data from lenders or development numbers from the outstanding portfolio. Now I see a slight shift happening on a monthly basis, but it doesn't really reflect yet on the statistics page. Is that something that is expected to change anytime?
Yeah, for sure. We have in our pipeline a lot of additions to, for example, our web page. We also want to have two sets of web page. Kind of one is retail investors and second is more for corporate investors, because we also have professional investors, professional investment funds currently in Debitum that have invested. Okay. And they also ask for, let's say, corporate governance section where you can see annual reports, everything. In Latvia, it's relatively simple. All the lenders you mentioned, apart from Triple and Evergreen, for example, the Latvian legal entities, you can publicly access it and you can see annual reports with quite detailed transcripts. Yeah, there is a certain timeline, but you can access them. But still, investors are telling, why should we go somewhere and look for something? Just make everything one stop, simply accessible. So we are currently working on the concept how we would have corporate section. Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, it's very important that investors understand where they invest. It's very important that they also understand risks, because, for example, the bond issue document, why I was referring that it's relatively complicated, it provides investor also certain pointers that there might be risk this, might be risk this, might be risk this, and maybe someone even hasn't considered. For us, it's important to have like full disclosure. If you are aware of risks, that's your decision, yeah? And the more information you can provide, I think then in long term, the relationship between investors works better.
Mm, I agree. Yeah, I know you apparently towards the end brought up another quick topic that we can jump in, which is the financing structure. Now, Debitum in its history so far has been mostly financed from retail investors. How do you see the financing structure on Debitum maybe changing now throughout the years? Do you consider more bringing in institutional investors, family offices, high net worth individuals? Where's the focus now forward?
Focus is retail investors. We are, I think you need to be loyal and you need to recognize who's behind the success and who's your real client. So I think in retail investors is bread and butter for Debitum. And I think that even if institutionals offer bigger tickets, for us in foreseeable future, I think retail investors will be most important part of how we operate. But in order to give something better for retail investors, sometimes there are good companies but with bigger tickets that you could offer retail investors. But sometimes with retail investors, it's not enough to kind of supply the request from bigger companies, which are safer or nicer. And then we are thinking of also working with institutionals. But that would kind of be a good synergy, that you have a bigger company, you need to have an institutional to service the big tickets, but then the retails can access it. So for us, priority is retail, but that doesn't mean that we can't work with institutions.
Mm. Okay, but maybe you can give me some numbers to balance the perspective, like how much volume do you expect to come from institutionals then forward?
No, forecasting is not easy. Yeah, to give you precise figures, it's hard. I think in upcoming 12 months, we've dedicated a person who will work with institutionals, who will introduce Debiton. And the essence is that we need to introduce investment opportunities that are good enough for institutionals. Yeah. And currently we have institutionals that have invested in Triple Dragon, for example, and they've deemed it worthy enough. So we need to find those investment opportunities, and then I think institutionals will organically come. So it's all about investment opportunities.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well, to wrap up, a quick outlook. I mean, throughout the conversation, you've pinpointed already a few things, like a smoother registration process, easy to navigate. You want to maintain a certain level of liquidity, high interest rates. Maybe you can pinpoint in another few directions what expectors can expect from Debiton moving forward, and also maybe because we discussed this prior the recording, maybe also new products, something maybe in the line of what Mintos offering in terms of fractional bonds. That's something that could be a new product line on the platform as well.
Yeah, so product wise we have a lot of things that we think would make experience in the platform better for investors. So registration process, then there's a lot of things in onboarding thing, then there's a lot of things, simple things like filling a questionnaire. Again, we wanted to do it as simple and as quick as possible, of course having in mind that we're regulated and we need to fulfill certain criteria, or we have certain limitations, but as quick and as simple as possible. We also want to add, but again, it's hard for me to, for example, speak about secondary market, which we're thinking of, because giving promises means that you need to deliver them. That's why I'm quite cautious, in a sense that I'm happy to tell that in July we are launching PIS product, this payment, because I already know that it's in place. Yeah. But the future products, I feel more comfortable that we get it done and then I can proudly announce it. Otherwise, it's sometimes over-promising. So we don't want to do that. We want to talk about things we already accomplished. We have accomplished good investment opportunities with very low default rate, with very good payment discipline. And we've constantly growing team, we're constantly adding new features so that the experience is better, but again, we do it and then we announce it. That's our approach.
All right, sounds good. Then Eric, thank you very much for the time, for all the answers. I think there's a lot of value to get out from for investors. So thank you very much for the time, for all those insights, and wish you continued success. Keep the good momentum going that I think you have right now, and looking forward to further news from Debiton.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.